Albert Einstein was traveling from Princeton on a train one time. And it was that time on the trip where the conductor was coming through and he was asking people for their tickets and punching it, canceling the ticket. And Albert Einstein realized what was coming, and so he was looking for his ticket in his pocket and his book and his portfolio, and he was frantically looking for his ticket. And the conductor came to him and he says, "Dr. Einstein, we know who you are, and I'm very, very sure that you bought a ticket, so please don't concern yourself. We know who you are." And the conductor went on and punching more tickets, and he was about to leave that car and to go on to the next, and he looked back, and there was Dr. Einstein down on all fours, looking underneath the seat and frantically looking for the ticket. And so the conductor goes back to the seat and he says, "Dr. Einstein, really, we know who you are. Please don't be concerned with this." And Dr. Einstein looked up at the young man and he says, "Young man, I too know who I am. What I don't know is where I'm going." That is not the message of the Apostle Paul in this text here this morning. 2 Corinthians 5:1-8, the Apostle Paul exudes very high confidence. He uses words like knowing. We know this. We are confident of this. We have this confidence. And a phrase like we have. It's not a possibility, it's not an I hope so, it's we have, we know this, we are confident of this. He knows that we are destined for the best. He knows what his destination is. He knows where he's going. Paul speaking as an apostle, as a minister of the gospel, in the context of great affliction. Meanwhile, he exudes this great confidence, knowing of his destiny. And he uses a contrast here that we'll find in verse 1. He uses a contrast between a tent and a building. A tent is a temporary shelter. A tent is intended to be erected and folded up rather rapidly, and it's just a temporary thing. And when you're done with it, you fold it up and you move on. Versus a house or a building, which is a permanent residence. And he understands that where we are right now, Paul says, where I am right now in this earthly tent, speaking of his physical body, it is simply a temporary thing that soon will and must be folded up and we move on. But he says, that's not a problem because we know that we have a permanent residence in eternity. And of course, I know Paul's speaking of the glorified physical body that we will have in eternity that is designed to last all of eternity. And so when he says it is not a building that is made with hands, what he's saying there, what that means is that building is not of this creation, because everything that is of this creation is corruptible. It must pass away. Probably many of you have been camping. All different levels of camping. For some of you, camping is a Hampton Inn without a microwave. And you consider that camping. For others of us, like my family, when we go camping, we like to rough it pretty much as we can. We actually cook over the open fire. And we sleep in tents, sometimes outside the tent. Sometimes we'll string a hammock up or you sleep right on the ground. Ben one time slept right on the ground underneath the stars, raccoons eating the dog food right near his head because our dog Nugget was there. Thankfully, they didn't eat Nugget. But that's, a camping trip is fun and you look forward to it and you plan for it. But, after a while, you're glad that that's not your permanent dwelling place, aren't you? You know where home is. You know home's coming. That's one reason why the camping is so bearable, because you know home is coming. You know where home is, and that's where you're going. I've been on some really bad camping trips where it rained the whole time, and we got home and everything was soaking wet. Part of the benefits of growing up a missionary kid, right? Everything was absolutely soaking, and we carried everything home, and we were just drenched, and we were, oh, are we glad to get home. And when you get home, there's there's comfort, there's security, there's a warm shower and all that stuff, you know. And you're so looking forward to get home. And that's the sense that Paul has here. Now, you look back at chapter 4 and verse 18, he says, we don't look at the things that are seen, we look at the things that are not seen. And that word look is the word scopeo, like a hunter's scope. You are focused on the objective. And you're so focused on the objective that you are not distracted by anything that's going on around. That's the word scopeo. And so it is with Paul. As a minister, in his adversity, and a great adversity it was. But even in the context of his adversity, he was not distracted by his surroundings. He was able to invest himself with abandon and death to the apostle, as it is for the child of God walking with God. Death is not a dreaded catastrophe. Death is walking through the door of home. That's how he saw it. How is it that we can have such confidence in this? Because the one who promised it not only gave a verbal promise, but he gave the guarantee even with his own body, his own life and his own body. He is the one who walked out of the grave in history. He is the one who appeared to the Apostle John and said, I am he who lives and was dead, and behold, I am alive forevermore. He is the same one who said to his followers, because I live, you shall live also. He is the one who said, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will never die. That is the confidence of our hope. And so, as Paul exudes this confidence here, even in the context of great hardship, he says, we know it. We have this confidence. But not only do we know it, but we groan for it. We groan for it. What is it that we're groaning for? We're not groaning for death. We're groaning for home. But to get home, you have to walk through that door, don't you? You have to fold up the tent and go home. So verse 2, for in this we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed with our heavenly habitation, which is from heaven. He's speaking there of a glorified physical body. He says, but meanwhile, we groan. In this tent, we groan, because one day we know it's got to be folded up and put away, and we move on and we go home. But he said, I think one of the translations says, meanwhile, we groan. That means we long for it. We're longing for home. The apostle says, I'm longing for home because I know it's there. As I said earlier, I'm a missionary kid, and I spent many years of my life in boarding school. And while you're at boarding school, you're away from home, a long ways from home, and you are counting the days to when you get to go home. This picture was taken in 1976. I know well everyone in this picture. Three people in that picture were here last Sunday. One of them is here today. That would be me. Thank you very much. I was in sixth grade when this picture was taken. Look what I'm doing. I'm the little guy with his back to you. During the middle of the day at school, there would be a break, and there's an 18-inch brick wall there in the center of the campus, and all of us fellow SAM missionary kids would get together. I and my brothers and these other two girls were fellow SAM MKs, and we would get together and just have a great time of fellowship with each other. Can you see what I'm doing? I'm holding my brother's hands. He's my oldest brother. You know why I'm doing that? Because we were a long way from home. And he was my connection to home. I longed for the days. When mom and dad would show up to take us back home. Because I knew that's where I belong. That's a natural human longing. And it's true in every one of us. You know, there is a universal testimony of the human heart throughout history in the belief of life after death. That there is more to this life than just what we have here and now. And in fact, anthropological evidence suggests that every culture in history has had a God-given innate sense of the eternal, something beyond the grave. Let me give you a few examples. The Australian Aborigines pictured heaven as a distant island beyond the western horizon. The early Finns, that's people from Finland, by the way, thought it was a distant island in a faraway east. Mexicans, Peruvians, Polynesians believed that they went to the sun or the moon after death. Native Americans believed that in the afterlife their spirits would hunt the spirits of buffalo. The Gilgamesh epic, an ancient Babylonian legend, refers to a resting place of heroes, and it hints at the tree of life. The pyramids in Egypt, the embalmed bodies had maps placed beside them as guides to the future world. The Romans believed that the righteous would picnic in fields of perfect happiness while their horses grazed nearby. Seneca, the Roman philosopher, said this, quote, "The day thou fearest as the last is the birthday of eternity." You see, eternity is not a distinctly Christian thing. However, Christianity distinctively defines eternity. And so, there is a universal human longing. Here's another example. In 1977, NASA launched Voyager 1 and 2. And attached to Voyager 1 and 2, there was a golden record. You see, back then they didn't have CDs or digital. Okay, it was a golden record. Okay, and on that they had recorded some sounds that someone out there might eventually someday get a hold of this, assuming they could play a record, right? And they had recordings of human sounds, of the human heartbeat, and sounds that represented humanity. And the lady, the scientist that was in charge of what they call the Voyager Interstellar Message, what song did she choose to represent humanity to whoever might be out there to hear this and to understand us as humans? She chose a piece from Beethoven, from Opus 130. It's the Cavatina movement. It's a very sad, slow-moving piece of music. It is a piece of composition in the margin of which Beethoven wrote the word Sehnsucht, which means longing. And what the NASA scientists wanted to communicate to whoever was out there was that at the core of our being, we are a longing people. How true it is. It's in every one of us. But what is it for which we long? That's what some people struggle to identify. And we've approached that longing in so many different ways. Take, for example, the last 100 years. And all the great clashes of the last 100 years. You take the 9 centuries before these last 100 years, and not one of them comes close to rivaling these last 100 years in terms of bloodshed. And every one of the major clashes of the last 100 years, maybe with the exception of World War I, all of the major clashes, Hitler, Stalin, Mao, the Taliban, all of those clashes have not been about the expansion of lands and the acquisition of riches. They have been about ideas and ultimately about the possibility of human perfection. that utopia where everyone is equal, Stalin would say, or where there was the great race, as Hitler would say, or the Taliban would say everyone is equally under Sharia law. How's that working out for us? Not so well, is it? I think C.S. Lewis said it well in terms of understanding the longing. He said, creatures are not born with desires unless satisfaction for those desires exist. A baby feels hunger, well, there is such a thing as food. A duckling wants to swim, well, there is such a thing as water. If I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. If none of my earthly pleasures satisfy it, that does not prove that the universe is a fraud. It probably, earthly pleasures were never meant to satisfy it, but only to arouse it, to suggest the real thing. That's good. This is what Paul wants us to understand. We're not going to find our satisfaction here, so we ought not be pursuing it here. Look what the psalmist says in Psalm 17:15. As for me, I will see your face in righteousness. I shall be satisfied when I awake in your likeness. What a tremendous truth. And the writer of Hebrews said the same thing. He for whom are all things and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons to glory. You see, that's God's objective, to bring His children home where we belong. Because that's where our longing is. It's where we belong. And so we move beyond just the human longing, which we recognize is a universal longing. We move beyond that universal longing to Christian longing. What is the Christian longing? And he points it out here in this text. Verse 2, desiring to be clothed with our heavenly dwelling. Desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven. That's our longing. And look what he says, verse 4, when mortality is swallowed up by life. You have a picture of this great fish swallowing up this little fish, right? And you know what that does? That turns our current existence right on its head. Because in our existence today, it seems like life gets swallowed up by mortality, which means that which is subject to death. But no, God turns that around. That's the glory of the gospel. Only the gospel gives this hope. And it's like the prodigal son who rebelled and he ran away from home and he lived prodigally, riotously, lavishly in satisfying himself. And when that ran out, he shared a meal with the pigs. And his thought went home to Dad. And he says, I want to be home with Dad. Because that's where I belong. And so he went. That's Christian longing. Let me read to you an example from the book Heaven, Our Real Home by Johnny Erickson Tada, who herself knows something of what it is to have a genuine physical longing for wholeness. She writes this, at the end of a 5-day retreat for families affected by disabilities, a microphone was passed around so all the participants could share a couple of sentences about how meaningful and how fun the week had been. Little freckled-faced red-haired Jeff raised his hand. We were so excited to see what Jeff would say because Jeff had won the hearts of all of us at the family retreat. Jeff has Down's syndrome. He took the microphone, put it right up to his mouth and said, let's go home. Later, his mother told me, Jeff really missed his dad back home. His dad couldn't come to the family retreat because he had to work. Even though Jeff had had a great time, a fun-filled week, he was ready to go home because he missed his dad. Johnny says, this world is pleasant enough, but could we really want it to go on forever? I don't think so. I'm with Jeff. I miss my daddy, my Abba Father. My heart is longing to go home. Don't miss the chance down here on earth to begin investing in eternity so that heaven can be your heart's home. That is exactly the message of the Apostle Paul. He invested himself with abandon because heaven was his longing. He was skopeo. He was fixed on the objective and was not distracted by the circumstances. You see, something that the Apostle Paul makes very clear in this text. We know that we are destined for the best. We know it. We groan for it. But there is something else. We can taste it. We can taste it. Listen, we have been given a foretaste. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. God has given us a foretaste, and that foretaste is the Spirit as a guarantee. The Spirit as a guarantee. This is Christian longing once again, and it's the guarantee that we have. It's the foretaste that we have. Let's think about that for a moment. As a Christian, you're already sensing God's presence because God has taken up residence in you, in the third person of the Trinity. You are sensing His presence. Picture yourself walking through Haynes Mall down here, and you're innocently looking through the stores and stuff, and then all of a sudden, you get the smell of butter and cinnamon and dough, sugar. It's Cinnabon attacking your olfactory senses. All of a sudden, what is it you want? You want a Cinnabon. You see, that sense is not just imaginary, it's real. And because you now have that sense, you now want that Cinnabon. And so it is with the Holy Spirit whom God has given us as a guarantee of the great satisfaction that is to come. That word guarantee means first installment, a down payment, if you will. It is the guarantee of the completion of a transaction. What transaction is that? The Lord tells us, as my child, you are destined for the best. We are invited into communion with the Trinity. You see, we are called into fellowship with the Trinity. We are called to belong at home with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. That is our home. That is where we belong. That is our longing. And we've been given the foretaste of that in the presence of the Holy Spirit. And verse 5 says, now he who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who has also given us the Spirit as a guarantee. How has He prepared us for this? He's prepared us for this by regeneration through the redemptive work of Jesus Christ. And as I surrender myself to Him in faith, He gives me His righteousness, and I am new creation. He says that, by the way, at the end of this chapter. Remember that? New creation. He has prepared us for that so that within me is the innate longing for home, for dad. That's how God has prepared us for that. And the third person of the Trinity is the down payment for that perfection which is to come. It is the foretaste. Let me share with you the power of Christian fellowship. Thursday mornings we have a Bible study, a sermon-based discussion at Panera Bread. Colin Lavoie leads the discussion. He does a wonderful job at that. Sometimes I wish we could have that discussion before I get up to preach the sermon. But as we were talking of that in the context, Colin was given an illustration. He says, Rich, he says, you know, when you get to heaven, one of the first people you're going to seek out is your dad. I've not had my dad for 20 years now. I miss him. But you know, when Colin said that, I was silent for the next couple of minutes. I don't know if they recognized it or not, but I couldn't speak, and there were tears running down my cheeks because I had actually never actually thought of that in all these years. The first, one of the first people, not the first, you know who the first is, obviously. But one of the first people I'm going to seek out is my own dad. There is a connection that we have even though he is in eternity and I'm still in my earthly tent. That's the power of Christian fellowship. Of holding on to your brother's hands because that sibling is your connection to home. The other day, I was doing dishes because no woman ever shot a man with his hands in the dishpan. And look outside on our deck. There's a window right there in over our sink, and they're looking out. And we have one of these decorative little flags hanging on a bar, and it was just draped there. Is all it was, just hanging there. And the thought comes to mind: why do we do stuff? I think weird thoughts like that. Why do we do stuff like that? You know. And then all of a sudden, this whiff of wind comes along, and the flag is fluttering like that. I'm like, there's something beautiful about it. And it grabs your attention. And you know, the Greek word for spirit is pneuma. Do you know it's the same word for wind? And so, you can't see the wind, but you can clearly see its effect on the physical entity. And so it is with the Spirit of God. We can't see Him. He is Spirit. But we can see His effect upon us and among us. What is that effect? The effect that the Spirit has upon me is a delight in God because the Spirit delights in the Father. And so His effect on me is to delight in God. The Spirit is yielded to the Father's pleasure, and that's His effect on me, is that I become yielded to the Father's pleasure, and that's our topic next Sunday. But not only that, as he says back in chapter 4 and verse 16, that we are, the inward man is being renewed day by day. How is that? That's the effect of the Holy Spirit, the third person of the Trinity, the foretaste, the guarantee that God has given us of where we belong. You see, only the gospel of grace satisfies this longing. It clearly defines it and it satisfies it. He says in verse 7, for we walk by faith, not by sight. And then as you come to verse 8. Is this your testimony? So we are confident. There's that word again, confident. We are confident. Yes, well pleased rather. Meaning this is something we prefer. To be absent from the body and to be present with the Lord. It is better. I would much rather be home than on a bad camping trip. And that's the best this life can become for us, is a bad camping trip. We long to be home. Is it your testimony? J. Vernon McGee writes, What is your ambition in life today? Is it to get rich? Is it to make a name for yourself? Is it even to do some wonderful thing for God? Listen to me, beloved, he says. The highest desire that can possess any human heart is a longing to see God. This is the Apostle Paul's heart. This is his communication to us this morning. A bit of a challenge as we come to a conclusion this morning. In his book, The Book of Dead Philosophers, Simon Critchley writes this: if proof were needed that many religious believers actually do not practice what they preach, then it can be found in the ignorance of religious teaching on death, particularly Christian teaching. Christianity in the hands of a Paul, an Augustine, or a Luther is a way of becoming reconciled to the brevity of human life and giving up the desire for wealth, worldly goods, and temporal power. But many Christians today are actually leading desperate atheist lives bound by a desire for longevity and a terror of death. Christians, loved ones, people of God, I hope this paragraph does not describe you. If it does, what can we do about it? You see, Paul the Apostle did not consider death to be a dreaded catastrophe. Death was simply folding up the tent and walking through the door to home. If God, to you, is little more than an idea, or maybe he's a distant judge who's kind of aloof, or if your walk of faith is simply a matter of just doing the right things, then I would guess that you're probably not too much longing for home. If you have ears to hear, please listen. But if your walk of faith is a growing walk in communion with God, the person, and a growing delight in him, then you're probably longing to see him face to face. I would gather that you are. You see, the more you seek God and delight in him, the more confident and longing you will become of being with him. And the less distracted you will be by temporal attractions and afflictions. And the more you will desire to invest yourself with abandon. Why? Because you are destined for the best. Skopeo. Fix your gaze on the objective and do not be distracted by what surrounds, whether those distractions are attractions or afflictions. Invest yourself with abandon, because you are longing, as a human being, you are longing for something. As a Christian, you are longing to go home to Dad.